Hello, good morning. Is everyone fully awake on the final day of the conference? So I hope you've had a really good conference, and thank you very much for getting up early to come to the first session of the last day. So my name's Nathan Winters. I'm an exchange specialist. I work at Microsoft in the UK, and I work with the top 300 customers in the UK doing things like architectural design sessions, helping customers to really understand the value of Microsoft messaging platforms. Now, today we're going to have a talk about Forefront and Forefront Online Protection for Exchange. We're going to start off with an overview. We're going to have a look at what the product is, what it does, some of the basic functions and features. Then we're going to run through things like how you get set up, where can you get a trial, how can you actually investigate the solution yourself and have a good time sort of getting up to speed with all the features in depth. And then we're going to go on and just look at some of the basic administration elements. So how you can actually configure the product, how you can work with it day in, day out, do things like reporting and auditing and management. Having done all that, set the scene, we're going to dive in and actually see what's going on behind the scenes. So we're going to look at things like policies and connectors, how we get mail routed in and out of the product, how we get to filter mail, do things like blocking attachments, doing things like data loss prevention. And then we're going to round off with some time looking at routing. And it's one of the most complicated areas of the Forefront solution, but it allows us to build some really powerful solutions. So when you think about Exchange, Office 365, and hybrid mode, and the ability for you to have an on-premises and a cloud solution joined together, Forefront plays its part in that, and that's one of the things that we're going to look at. And of course, we'll end up with some time for questions at the end. So the overview. This is a representation of this service. And as you can see, fundamentally what we've got here is an antivirus, anti-spam solution that is hosted in the cloud by Microsoft and, really provides a great deal of security for your messaging platform. But it's more than that as well. We've got things like policies and the ability to do encryption so that we can, for example, block email, we can filter email down and block things based on headers, based on size of attachment, based on where the mail's going to, where the mail's coming from. There's quite a lot of flexibility, and I'll talk about that as we get into the policy section. You'll also notice that we can do spooling of mail or queuing of mail so that, again, if you have a small outage on your internet connection or one of your servers that is going down, then actually we can hold that mail for you again for up to 5 days until you get that system back up. So some peace of mind and resilience within the solution as well. And from the administrative and end-user perspective, you can see in the bottom right-hand corner of the slide, we've got different interfaces. So from the user perspective, users can actually interact with the service based on, filtering junk mail. So things that are quarantined, users can go in and actually, unfilter that so that the mail will be delivered, or they can have that mail delivered directly to their junk mail folder in Outlook. And there is a variety of options that we'll talk about as well in a few moments. From the administrator point of view, again, slightly different depending on whether we're talking about Office 365 or whether we're talking about the standalone edition of Foppy, and I'll talk about that on the next slide. But basically, a web-based console which gives you pretty clean interface, fairly straightforward, very easy to find out what you're trying to do, and I'll show you that as we walk through. So lots of different components, and we're going to go through them all step by step and get you up to speed with the whole service as a whole. So where can Forefront Foppy be deployed? As you'll see here, Office 365, every single customer that's on Office 365 is a Foppy customer. So all the mail filtering that gets done as part of Office 365 is actually being done by Foppy. So you can imagine that it's a fairly large service. It's actually one of Microsoft's largest online services. And we filter somewhere between 1 and 3 billion messages a day. So that's a significant amount of email. And as you can imagine, the vast majority of that is, of course, spam. We can also deploy in a standalone method. So where you've got an email service that is on-premises or maybe it's hosted for you by a provider, we can actually filter and protect mail for that as well. So anything that you have an MX record which gets the mail into the mail system, we can use Foppy to protect that. So it doesn't just have to be Exchange. It can be basically any messaging system that we have out there that can be that can have mail coming into it via an MX record. And then, as I touched on at the beginning, hybrid scenarios. This is where we have 365 and we've also got Exchange on premises, and we can actually have a fairly tight interaction there. We use some of the functionality to make sure we have trusted connectivity. We can remove some of the filtering and really have quite a lot of flexibility how we get the mail between the two systems to provide what looks like to the end user a single integrated platform with just internal users, no matter whether they're hosted in the cloud or whether they're hosted on premises. So that sort of sets the scene, really, just gives you an example of what the service is and where it can be deployed. A couple of things to point out, really, about the differences between some of these deployments. If, for example, you deploy Office 365 with a P plan, and that's essentially when you're looking at small businesses, then you don't have all the functionality of being able to go into the console and do things like custom routing and setting up custom filtering. It's just very much a standard antivirus, anti-spam platform. Whereas if you're with Office 365 in the enterprise, the e-plans, then at that point you can go in and do all the editing and do all the things that we're going to talk about for the rest of the session. One final point, which is that with Office 365, actually the antivirus piece happens as part of the service. So what you'll actually see when you look at the console of Foppy when you're using Office 365 is that virus filtering will be disabled. That's not something to worry about. That's simply the way the service works. The actual filtering happens on the hub transport servers as part of Office 365, and Foppy is essentially just filtering the spam mail as it comes through its service. So as you can understand, Foppy becomes a fairly important part of your messaging infrastructure. It's where all the mail flows into, and generally speaking, where all your mail flows out from as well. So service level agreements are critical. You know, so we've got some pretty good stats here. 100% known virus protection, greater than 98% spam detection, and 1 in 250,000 false positives. Now, you know, really, they're pretty conservative, to be honest. We find that actually we're getting somewhere around 99.95% spam detection. So that's a pretty high rate. We're getting perhaps 1 in 750,000 false positives. So all in all, a pretty high level of service. And of course, then there's the uptime of the service as well. 5 nines protection, which means somewhere around 5 minutes of downtime a year. And that's an SLA that we haven't broken in the last 12 months. So, you know, a pretty solid solution. It's enterprise ready and it's backed by these financially backed SLAs. So how does it work? And this is perhaps more of the interesting stuff. How does it work in terms of multi-layer protection? And multi-layer protection, how can you think about that? I think about it in the terms of, this is what you would do as a human. You know, if you're not sure about something, you'll ask questions. And then you'll ask perhaps more clarifying questions so that eventually you're absolutely certain that you've, you know, got the point of the message. And in a sense, that's what Foppy's doing. It's really filtering email at various different levels. So we start off at the connection filtering layer. Fundamentally, as I mentioned earlier, we've got perhaps between 1 and 3 billion messages coming in per day, and we need to cut out roughly 95% of them because that's the level of spam that we see on the service. So we do that in bulk at this connection filtering layer, the first layer, and it's basically simple TCP, looking at the source IP, looking at the subnet where this has come from, and figuring out that the vast majority of spam comes from these IP addresses, this big range of botnets, basically. So we can block up to 80% of the spam at that point, which is great because it's really straightforward. It means we don't even have to take that message in. We just dump that connection straight away. One of the things we have seen is that actually over the last year and a half, couple of years, Microsoft's done a whole lot of work, and you'll have probably read about this in the technical presses, about shutting down botnets. You know, we've had some pretty good success in actually killing off a few of these massive spam-generating botnets. And what's interesting is it's actually changed the way we see spam coming into Foppy as the service. And so that number of 80% at that first layer, it used to be around about 95% because, you know, there were so many more botnets and actually bigger botnets out there that we were very, very comfortable in shutting down even more spam. So what's actually happened is the spammers have got more clever, they've changed the way they operate, and therefore actually we're unable to capture all the spam at that level, and some of it's then being passed down to the lower layers. And that's why it's so important to have this sort of multiple level approach to actually capture all the spam. So we've gone down to 80% there, and that's primarily because the spammers have started off sending out spam in sort of groups of 5 messages, maybe 10 messages per IP address. And that's a lot harder to figure out. You know, we've got these small little groups of spam coming out from one machine. That's a lot harder to filter and add to our block lists. So we then move on to sender and recipient filtering, and basically, again, based on a block list technology, we've got an internal block list, and we also make use of the spam house list and have a good relationship there where we can take things on and off the list in a programmatical manner. Again, sender recipient filtering is just looking at the basic SMTP verbs. So we're really doing the hello, E-H-L-O, where's that mail coming in from, where's it going out to? And again, we have a list of people that are blocked and senders and recipients that are blocked. So this is all really pretty straightforward stuff, and it's all very quick to do, which means we can keep that mail flowing right through the system as quickly as possible. Then we get on to the third layer, and this is where the good technology happens. This is where the interesting stuff is. We've got a team of spam analysts that work around the world. They're distributed around the globe, and FOPI as a service, again, is distributed very heavily globally so that we've got the ability to load balance right the way around the world, and it's very, very hard for that service then to be taken down. So these spam analysts, they're the guys that write the content filtering rules, and we've got thousands, literally, of rules that, based on regular expressions, that target various different types of spam. They go into the body of the message, they go into the headers, they can look at different MIME types, they can, you know, really filter down at the very, very low level of a messaging conversation. And so these rules are constantly being updated. You know, because we've got this team that's geographically dispersed, then they work 24 hours a day, they hand over to each other, and we will be writing rules literally all the time. You know, they'll be published and they get replicated around the service every 30 to 45 minutes. So we're constantly updating the service with rules that come in, and I'll show you a little bit more about that on the next slide. So really, once we've gone through all these different levels of filtering, we're pretty comfortable that we're capturing, as I say, 99.95% of spam as it comes through. As we come out the bottom, we then give that message a SCL value, so a spam confidence level value. And you'll have seen that if you've looked at message headers and how they work when they come into Outlook. So Outlook then takes that message and potentially passes it through its smart screen technology as well, and then that message could either end up in the junk folder or it could end up, obviously, in your inbox. So there are multiple layers, and it takes this journey all the way through from the top to the bottom. This is really a sort of slightly different representation, but just shows the journey that the message goes through. So you'll see basically that the message starts up, it's coming from the internet and coming in. And we then come into the spam prevention area of the service. And fundamentally, this is doing the top two pieces of that funnel. So where we had that connection and the sender and recipient filtering. That's happening here. It's very quick, it's very efficient, and we can drop a large amount of mail. Once we've done that, we then, assuming it's not spam, so the message is now moving on, we move through to the virus section. And here we use multiple engines, so we can have, you know, different types of engine that perhaps are better or worse at different elements of virus scanning, and hopefully will capture, you know, a large number. And as you saw, we've had 100% SLA on known viruses at least. But we have multiple engines that will then scan that for viruses. Obviously, again, we drop them that are viruses, but the messages that don't have viruses, we pass forward. And this is where, from an administrative point of view, you can do the clever stuff. This is where you can do the routing. This is where you can do your own types of policy to block things internally and, you know, set up your own rules. Assuming that you're happy and the message is perfectly fine and you want that routed, it will pass through. And at this point, this is where we do that deep level content filtering. And we do it last simply because at this point we will have dropped about 90% of all that mail, which means that from the services perspective, again, we're using the resources efficiently and we can make sure that message processes through as quickly as we possibly can. So Obviously, once we've done this filtering, we then deliver on to you as the end customer. And this is where we can queue messages. So again, this is where if you've got that server that's gone down or if your internet connection's gone down for whatever reason, we can queue that for up to 5 days and have that held for you. So at this point, you've got the message is in your inbox as the end user, and you potentially want to give some feedback. You may find that actually we have sent through some spam that you didn't really particularly want, and then you can do something called a SUA report. So a spam early warning report, which is basically the way that we find out then what's going on in the world. This is how we found out that these spammers had changed tactics and they were doing these sort of 5 messages or 9 messages. It's because people sent in those messages. And we basically then pass those on to the spam analyst team. They then write some content filtering rules and the whole process goes round and round again. Those are replicated and so on. And constantly we're improving that filtering service. So it's obviously important, and we've got some tools which enable the end user to do that just simply through Outlook, and I'll talk about those when we get to the junk management section. So that is inbound mail. What about outbound mail? Now, you know, you may or may not choose to have your outbound messages filtered through the service, but we would recommend that you do, simply because it enables us to protect you as a company and your brand and your reputation simply by doing that filtering outbound. You know, if you accidentally end up with a virus on some system, or if you're somehow taken over and someone is sending some spam and routing that out through your system, it actually means that we can capture that and actually notify you and say, well, look, you know, we've seen these messages coming through. They've got a high spam level. Are you sure that's deliberate and so on? And we can actually work with you to improve what's going on there. So, again, very straightforward. The mail will process through. It'll go through the various different levels of scanning, come through policies. And this, for example, would be where if you're having your outbound mail routed through the service, you can then set up things like outbound encryption and have that, as the message is going through, fitted a profile. And yes, we want to encrypt that, for example. And again, we'll come on to that in a moment. So goes through policies, checks for spam, and then routed out to the internet. Now, we've got two different routes out to the internet. We've got the outbound pool, and that basically is the way we choose to route mail if it's got a low spam score. So this is standard mail, normal mail, going out to the internet. And the reason we do this is basically because we want this outbound pool to maintain a very high reputation. We don't want people to blacklist this, because fundamentally that would then take the service level to customers down as a whole. So we also have a second approach, which is the sort of high-risk pool. And this is where we might send things like NDR messages out. This is where we might send things out that look like bulk messages, but they're perhaps just on the borderline of being considered spam or not. But we've got that second route, which means that we can still deliver that mail for customers, but we do make sure that we try and maintain a very high reputation for the main outbound pool so that we can have a good level of service. Okay, so that's, in summary, an overview of the service. It's the anti-spam, antivirus filtering package. It's got a lot of interaction that you can have as an administrator, and you can see how that filtering package works on multiple different layers to make sure that we capture a huge amount of spam and as many of the viruses out there as we possibly can do. Now, what we're going to look at next is how you actually get this thing set up, because you know, it's always the same with these presentations. You come to a conference, you hear a presentation, and that's all right. But by the time you get home, you've forgotten half of it. So what I would strongly recommend is you go to this link here, and obviously you'll have the slides available for download. And the link at the bottom of this slide is where you can sign up for a trial. And this will give you a 30-day trial to the service. Simply go and have a play with it. This is where you can go and see exactly what it can do. It's very straightforward. There's no sort of need to go and buy it at the end. You can try it out, and obviously you might find that it's useful. So assuming you've done that, you've gone to the service, these are the steps that you will then need to go through. So as part of signing up, what you will do is you will give a domain that you want to work with. You'll give some IP addresses where mail comes out and into, and you'll obviously set up an account. So firstly, you'll log on, validate your password, change that, and so on. And then what we need to do is validate the domain that you have set up. So This process, if for anyone who's played with Office 365, is very familiar. Basically, you create a text record in your DNS zone or an MX record, an invalid MX record, so you're not affecting the routing of your mail. And that enables us to just check that you actually own this domain and you're not playing around with someone else's domain, which is obviously important. Once you've done that, then you can add other domains, set those up and do that validation in the same way. And then really you're through and ready to actually start processing mail through the system. You change your MX record to point to mail.messaging.microsoft.com, and mail will then be able to start flowing through the service, and it will be routed out based on the default connectors, which have the IP addresses of your mail system that you will have given us when you actually signed up. And really, that is as straightforward as it comes. It's very easy to get this up and running. Once you've done so and you're happy with the mail flow, then you should restrict the incoming traffic to the servers that FOPI talk to, obviously the FOPI IP addresses, because obviously otherwise a spammer who has already got your IP address could potentially just route mail directly, not via your MX record, but just inject that directly via an IP address connection. You should set up email deferral notifications, and that's important because fundamentally if your servers go down, we can't notify you unless you give us a different email address in order for that mail to be sent and that warning message. So set up some Hotmail account or set up a second address somewhere on a different system so that if your internet goes down and you're not noticing that, I'm sure you would be, but if you can't route mail for whatever reason, we can notify you. After that, then outbound filtering set up, and that's done in exactly the same way, setting up basically an outbound smart host connector to mail.messaging.microsoft.com. So really all very straightforward stuff, and at that point set up some accounts, take message flow, test the various things, and that's the validation done. So really you can get this set up and running within half a day, probably less to be honest, just sometimes there's a processing backlog in terms of how you get them the account set up. But really, once you've got the account set up, it's very, very quick to get your mail flow up and running and be testing the service. So once you've done that, then what next? What next is really the best practices, how you make sure that this is going to operate at scale for an enterprise environment. So it's all very well testing, but when you come into the enterprise, then we're going to need to do some other things. So directory synchronization is the first one. This enables you to make sure that we're only accepting mail for users that you actually have. We're not accepting mail for accounts that don't exist in your organization. And we protect that with the usual sorts of tarpitting and so on to make sure that people can't harvest your directory. Next, setting up the SPF records. So again, you've basically changed the outbound mail flow from your domain, and it's going out now via some different servers, which obviously are part of the FOPI service. So we need to set up an SPF record so that, again, your reputation of outbound mail is still high, and we still recognize that mail is coming out from the FOPI service for your particular domain. Network connection settings, again, is important. So things like making sure that you have the right timeouts on your firewall, so making sure that you're sending the right number of messages through each individual connection. And that way we can maintain very fast and very high rates of message flow without any bottlenecks occurring in the system. Security, again, we've got the ability to lock down the system so that you can only access the administrative console from a small group of IP ranges, and also that you can set up a password policy which is complex and so on and so forth. So all the normal sorts of security practice that you would follow, it's just something that you can also apply to the FOPI service. Setting up of routing with virtual domains is another option. This gives you the ability to designate different routes for mail flow so that, for example, if you had some US servers, some Europe servers, we could actually have selected groups of mail flowing directly into each set in each site, and therefore not having to go across your internet WAN bandwidth connection. So there's some flexibility there. And then, as I mentioned earlier, that whole ability to allow users to report false positives. You can turn that on within the service and then allow users to actually send those messages and the headers through. And I'll talk a little bit more about that when we talk about junk mail filtering. So that's the setup. It's very quick, very simple, pretty straightforward, and something you can do in half a day at most, really. Once you've done that, then what do you do with the service? You know, once you've done that, we're basically on to administration. And what I want to show you now is a few views into the administrative console. I think what you'll see here is that it's a pretty clean interface. This is the main dashboard that you come into when you actually join the service and you log in as an administrator. And what you get is a representation of emails in and out, filtered and so on. But you also get announcements, and you can subscribe to this as an RSS feed and get notifications about threats, about viruses, about various things that are going on with the service, potential maintenance, for example. All these things can be fed through to you. We've also got some resources around training and around configuration best practices. So really, you're not going around hunting for documentation, looking for training for your administrators. They can actually come in here, click some links, and basically get up to speed again very quickly. The information's all located in one place. On this slide, you'll just see the users. And this is something which is specific to the standalone deployment of FOPI. So when we deploy FOPI in a standalone fashion, what happens is we set up directory synchronization, and we import the users and anything that's mail-enabled, essentially. Anything with an email address, we import. And this allows us to protect it and enable it for various different features in FOPI, for example, the encryption feature that we need an additional license for. And that enables us to do that because we have that representation and the synchronization of those users. So that's what it looks like when it comes to the standalone service. With Office 365, that synchronization is actually done as part of the Office 365 directory synchronization, and those users won't show up in here because actually that's managed through the normal sort of single sign-on process and things that you get with Office 365. So it's slightly different, and I just wanted to highlight that, because otherwise you may consider that you can't find your users if you're looking at the 365 console. So the other tab that you would have seen across the top, we had the company, we had administration. The next one along was My Reports. And again, when you're using a cloud service, it's essentially giving some control up as to how you work with your system. And so reporting and auditing are very, very important, because it's what allows you to know that you're still in control, you've got all that data that's going on, and you can really track the usage and track the various things that you need to know as an administrator, if nothing else, to report to your management. So it's important that we can have very good reporting. And what we've got as part of the service, again, is four fairly standard reports, but give you quite a lot of information around things like the traffic levels, the top users, whether mail's being deferred and why it's being deferred, and whatever viruses that might be coming in and attacking the system. And it's very straightforward to view. It comes up in a reporting format that will be familiar. So we can see that this is the My Reports tab. I've got a report that's there, General Report 1. But the nice thing about this is actually we can schedule these reports to be created. So I have this scheduled so that every Monday morning I get this email to me. It comes in an Excel file format that we could then do various other filtering and do various analysis on. And it's just very easy to work with. This would be an example of one of the other reports, which is really, again, straightforward, simple information, but just showing us, who are the top users, what kind of traffic we've got going on in the service, and where we've got top senders and recipients. Also things around spam. Where's spam coming from? Now, it's a fairly basic report, because obviously on a test network, you never get that much mail, and it's actually quite hard to get lots of spam to email addresses unless you sign up for lots of very slightly dubious sources and so on, which is never a great thing to do at Microsoft. So we've got limited spam coming in here, but it gives you an idea of what the report looks like anyhow. So the other thing that's really important is message tracing. And message tracing obviously gives you a lot of information really around whether that message was sent, whether it was received, and in particular, and what's perhaps most important, is what happened to that message if it wasn't delivered, because you always get that situation where the user's sort of, well, I should have received this email, okay, but you didn't. So that email then needs to be tracked down, and obviously you've got the Exchange message tracking tools to do that if it's an internal message, but more often than not, it's come from some third party and it will have come in through your filtering system, and likely it's been blocked by some policy or other. So with the message tracing, we can do that tracking. We can actually find out what's happened to the message, and we can get a level of information based on the message ID, sender and recipient, email addresses and IP addresses where that has come from and is going to. And in particular, and what's important really, is the filtering results. So you can see on this message here, we've got the past filtering section at the bottom there. And basically, what we can have in that area is a large range of different pieces of information which tell us exactly which policy, which rule has blocked the email. So we can then go back and actually track through our rules and find out, well, was that correctly set or was it a mistake? And we can tweak our rules and actually go in and make sure that we allow that message in the future if it's something that we intend to do so. So again, reasonable level of reporting and ability to track messages as they come through the system. And then the final piece around administration is auditing. Because again, giving up some control of your service to a cloud provider, you need to know exactly who's doing things to that service. And this gives you a level of granularity. It shows you which administrator has done anything. It shows new administrators being added. It shows what the service administrators as a whole might have done to your tenant, for example. And obviously, you can work with support and have support do various things that perhaps you can't do in the direct GUI, because there's obviously things like changing policies and changing things at a low level in the service that you need to raise with support. And that will show up here as well. So we can really see and track exactly what's going on with the service at an administrative level in a lot of different detail. So a few stats, a few sort of simple stats, and this is more for reference than anything else, but just some numbers really around how long we keep different types of data. So message tracing data is kept for 30 days. We keep deferral, policy, virus details for 90 days. User traffic is kept for 14 weeks, so we can see trending over time. We keep data, we keep mail that goes into quarantine for 15 days, and we can queue mail if it's if your connections are down, we can queue that for up to 5 days. So just, again, data for reference really, but just worth being aware of as you look to take the service, you know, it's worth knowing exactly what those policies are. So that brings me on to junk mail. Now, obviously, you know, one of the fundamental things that Foppy does is manage junk, spam mail. And there's two particular ways that this happens. So the default really is that spam is sent through into your junk email folder within Outlook, because actually from the end user perspective, that's really the easiest thing for the users to manage, because as mail comes through there, it means it's available to them in the normal fashion. They can actually go in. They don't have to go off to another interface to try and see whether they've got some junk mail. So by default, that's where we route mail. And it also allows a few other enhancements. It means that within Outlook, you can manage safe senders and blocked senders, and you've got that little bit of control. The other option is for that junk mail to go into the Foppy quarantine system. And that's what we mentioned on the previous slide, is kept for then up to 15 days. So what happens then is that you get a notification, assuming you've turned those on, and you can obviously control that. But every 3 days, you would get a notification if you've turned them on as an end user to tell you whether or not there's any mail in the quarantine system that you need to be aware of. So two different ways, and I'll show you what they look like in the next couple of slides. There's a few other things that you can do with messages that Foppy deems to be spam. We can do redirection. So in that instance, what we can do is have all mail that's considered to be spam sent to one inbox, one SMTP address. And that means that from an administrative point of view, you can monitor that address, that mailbox, and just see that messages, those messages coming through. Maybe that's something which is pretty time-consuming. Realistically, maybe having those messages go to the individual users that they were sent to, and then they can decide whether or not that's junk or not. Maybe that's a better option. But certainly, some companies like to do that. We can also add an X header. So XHeader obviously is something which allows you to put something into the header of the message, which then can be identified by different email processing applications or appliances when that mail then arrives at your organization, which means that you can then choose to do something with that message and route that in a certain way, but it's not something that's governed as such by FOPI, but we can put in that sort of placeholder so that something else can then pick that up and do some more processing with that email. And then the very simple one, we can change the subject. And, you know, we've all seen email that's got likely spam or something in bold letters at the beginning of the subject. So that's something that we can do there. And again, just to give that a little bit further visible information to the end user. So again, a little bit difficult to see this one, but we've all seen Outlook. So I'm sure you're familiar with this. And you know that if you right-click on the email, then we've got the ability to do junk mail filtering. And one of the things that we can do, obviously, is to block. We can add then rules to our safe senders or our blocked recipients list. One of the other things that we can do from here, if we install an add-on, and if you go and search on the Microsoft download site, you'll find this junk reporting add-on, is that actually from the same menu, you can then go in and report this email into FOPI. So instead of just blocking it and saying, yes, this is definitely spam, we don't want this, you can actually report it. And that was one of the things about the user feedback element. It's very simple for the end user because the end user doesn't need to know anything particular about message headers or anything complicated. They simply right-click the mail, go to junk and say report mail as spam. And what happens then is the add-in will bundle up the headers and they will send those off to those team of spam analysts within the FOPI service who will then look, analyze, and if necessary, then create a new filtering rule which will go and replicate around the service. And that's really how we get this constant level of updates to make sure that we're continuing to, you know, fight spam, which is constantly changing. You know, the spammers out there constantly coming up with new ideas, new ways of sending through spam, and this is one of those ways that we can continue to fight that really with a collective user base that's helping us to do that. So the other option, as I mentioned, for spam filtering is using the quarantine experience within FOPI. And as you can see, this looks an awful lot like Outlook Web App, and you know that's understandably what it's based upon. It's very sort of simple view. We've got the ability to see junk email and also quarantined email. And quarantined email, as you can see, is slightly different. This because obviously we've got the ability to both stop junk mail that FOPI as a service thinks is spam, but also to pick up if you as administrators have set up a rule that says, actually, I want to quarantine this type of mail when I see it in one of my policies. And that will then go into this slightly separate folder so that you've got some change and visibility between the two types of messages that might be blocked. So again, simple interface. We can do things like moving to the inbox, marking it as not junk and sort of therefore marking it as safe and mail that you want to keep. But it just it's pretty straightforward there and a good view from the administrative and the end user perspective. So we've talked about this already and covered that just a little bit, but it just gives you a few more details. And basically, you get that when you do the right click and you say, I want to report this as junk, you get the pop-up window there, which really just talks about, you know, do you want to report this? Understand that it's going to package up the headers and send those off to Microsoft to help them improve the service. Okay, so that's been a lot of information to take in. I hope you've followed that. What we're really going to look at now is some of the more low-level elements of FOPI and how you as administrators can interact with the system, the service, to make the mail go where you want it to and to block and filter the mail that you need to do so. So we start off with connectors. Now, connectors are really what give you the ability to control the edge of the service as mail comes through. So they very much are similar to the concept of exchange, send and receive connectors. You know, in FOPI we call inbound connectors and we have outbound connectors. So the inbound connectors, obviously it's the mail coming into FOPI, that's like the receive connector in exchange. The outbound connector is like the send connector in exchange. And if you keep that in mind, then it's fairly easy to understand what they do, to be honest. We've got the ability to do and control filtering and routing. So by source IP, source domain, when that connection is made from the first place. We've got the ability to connect and control security. So whether we need, for example, a certificate to do transport layer security, TLS, and do that sort of authenticated mail flow. By default, FOPI always does opportunistic TLS. So if someone asks it to do TLS, we will respond and say, yes, we can do that. But equally, you can also force that. On the filtering side, we then have these different layers of filtering. And again, this is what we talked about right at the beginning with that sort of funnel and the way we do multiple layers of filtering. And we can control those, again, on a different each connector basis. So these connectors you can set up to enhance the default in and out of mail and have certain mail to certain domains or certain senders or from certain domains filtered and managed in the way that you choose. This is what allows you, for example, to set up a trusted connection between your on-premises solution and Office 365. And then we'll talk about that when we come through to the mail routing section shortly. On the outbound front, then again, you can control the similar sorts of things. But the most important thing really here is delivery. We can obviously route mail outbound using DNS and MX records, but we can also use smart hosts. So again, if you've got a trusted partner, you can route mail directly to their domain and have that done within the service. The other half of the equation is policies. So the connectors really control the edge. The policies allow you to continue and do that filtering based on what you need to do to route mail, to block mail, and to control mail flow within your organization. So there's a fairly complex slide. There's a fair amount of detail here. We start on the left-hand side with the scope. So basically what we're looking to do is to pick the mail that we want to do something to. And we start with the scope. We're basically looking at whether or not it's one or all of the domains within the service and whether or not it's inbound or outbound mail. Once we've made that fairly simple determination, then we come on to the details of how we match to different email. So lots of different things here, many things that you'd expect, frankly, you know, words and phrases in the subject body. So straightforward, simple to understand what that does. But the other kind of more useful things and perhaps more complex things are the fact that we can match on anything within the header of the email. That's something that we can't generally do in Exchange natively without doing some custom transport agents. So we can pick up various different fields within the header. I mentioned, for example, the X header that we talked about adding to spam messages. Well, you know, you can find that being added by other services and so on, and we can pick up and route mail based on that. We can also do simple things like attachment types, attachment sizes, so we can block things like EXE files, VBS files, and so on. And all the range up and down through senders, recipients, IP addresses, and domains. Perhaps what's really interesting is the bottom one, and that's regular expressions. So basically, you can go out and write a regular expression which will match, for example, a credit card. You could go and match anything you can come up with, really, in a regular expression. It's a fairly simple to understand syntax, but you can go and be very, very detailed about how you pick which mail you want to then do something to. And that's where we then come across to the action side of the slide, the third column, which tells you what you can do with that message. Of course, we can reject it. We can allow it. Simple things. But all the way through, we could quarantine that message, and that's where it would then show up in that quarantine field that we showed on the junk mail management slide. We could redirect the message, we could change its email address, we could deliver it with a BCC field and blind carbon copy someone. We can do TLS and force TLS. And then we can do encryption. And encryption is one of those additional pieces of the FOPI service. So it's not turned on by default. It's something that requires an additional license. And the reason for that is because essentially it's using third-party technology. And I've got a section on that very soon. The final one here is test. Now, why might you want to test? And what does that really mean? Well, let's say that you've written this very complex and clever regular expression. Let's say you've got that wrong. And then you've basically filtered all your mail. Which is never a good position to be in if you put your whole inbound mail into junk, for example. And, you know, these things do happen. So test is important in that sense. It allows you to either, you know, put an additional header into the message or change the subject. So you can just check that that regular expression you've written is correct and it's not picking up the word the or and or something like that, and you've accidentally quarantined a whole bunch of email that you didn't really want to do. So that's why testing is important. Now, I mentioned this earlier, but when you set up, when Microsoft sets up these new spam filtering rules, so when Microsoft, the analysts, are going to set up the spam filtering rules, they take about 45 minutes to replicate around the world. It's similar when you set up your own rules. You've got to bear in mind that we want mail to route in exactly the same way wherever data center that mail might come into. So we need to allow some time. So if you go in and test this, set this up, don't think, I've done something wrong. It's not working. Why is it not working? Hit refresh a lot of times, get annoyed, and then go and do something else. The funny thing is, if you do go and do something else, have a coffee, by the time you come back, it will then work. So it's always one of those things. There's a lot of Microsoft technology that's a little bit like that. If you wait 15 minutes, then Active Directory is replicated and some stuff magically starts to work again. And FOPI, well, it's around 30 to 45 minutes. If you wait that long, the service will then replicate around all the data centers and we'll have a consistent set of rules that you can then see that mail coming into and out of. So we touched on this, and this is just a little bit more depth around the policies. I'm not going to go into this in too much detail. It's something that you can take away and have a read through. But really, there's two types of syntax. The basic syntax, which allows you to do some basic sort of wildcards. And then the regular expression syntax, which is what we were talking about and allows you to do more granular filtering. So you can obviously match strings. You can match at the beginning of a string, at the end of a string. You can match that bottom one, for example, which is /D/D and so on and so forth with a /S for a space. And obviously that represents a credit card. So you can build up these things and make sure that you're doing some basic sort of data leakage prevention, basic filtering of messages that shouldn't be within the system. The other thing that you can do, which helps you to maintain ease of use, really, as an administrator, is use these filters. And basically, this is something you can add into a rule. So you can upload a dictionary of terms. So a dictionary is basically, as it says, 2 megabytes or 9,000 characters in size. You can obviously upload multiple dictionaries. And it's just a list of terms. You know, you can see what you can add in here. We can add in IP addresses, we could add in email addresses, keywords, file names and extensions. So the thing about this is obviously if you've got a particular set of terms that are common in your industry, which you don't want to have to type into different rules, you just want to put those in a dictionary, you can upload that and then use those on multiple different rules without having to constantly repeat yourself. So it's a bit flexible. It gives you another piece of administration simplicity. So that brings me on to encryption. And you saw on the slide which talked about the different ways that we can do policies that one of the actions was encrypt. Now, Exchange Hosted Encryption is an add-on to FOPI, and it's using technology by Voltage, so Voltage Secure Mail technology. And this enables you to do encrypted mail without the hassle of managing keys, public-private certificates, like you would have to do with SMIME in the traditional sense. You have to manage those, get them into contact objects, put them in your address list for people to look up. All those things which basically take time and are complex and the users don't necessarily understand. With the EHE product, it's all done for you. Now, there are some benefits and some disadvantages to that, but the basic benefit is you don't have to go in and actually manage those keys. They're all managed by the service. It uses something called identity-based encryption. And basically what that means is as you send a message, you're sending it to someone's email address. That email address is then used to generate public and private key pair, which are hosted by the EHE service. The mail is sent through, it's encrypted, and sent on to the end user, who's the recipient. What they then get is something which is referred to as Zero Download Manager. Fundamentally, what it means is that the user gets an email with an HTML attachment. The attachment is basically a blob, which within it has the encrypted email. So the user has got the email, the email's in the inbox, but it's encrypted and they can't access it until they validate that they are that user. So for the first time they get an encrypted message, they have to sign up and just validate with the service, with the Voltage technology, that they actually own that email address. So they exchange an email address, set up an account and a password, and then they can log on and actually open that attachment. And what's happening is that the blob within the HTML attachment is sent up to the service unencrypted, so the keys are always maintained on the service, they're not having to be brought down to the client. The mail's unencrypted, it's sent back, and you can then view that in an HTML viewer. So that's a very simple solution. It's very easy for that user to follow through that workflow. It's very straightforward to sign up. It's a very quick process. And once you've done it once, then after that, you can always maintain that account and view and receive those encrypted messages. The nice thing about it is the end user doesn't have to install anything. They don't have to pay for anything as a recipient. It's all done on the fly as the mail processes through FOPI. So really, just to wrap up this section on policies and connectors, what can be done with the FOPI service, I just wanted to look at this because, oh, I have a question.
Is there also a way to use encryption for internal mail?
So the question was, is there a way to use exchange-hosted encryption for internal mail? And the answer to that really is, not with any ease, because basically the service is sending a mail outbound. You can only set it up on outbound mail, and it's going outbound through the service out to the internet. So it's just really for outbound messages. I think what we would say really for internal mail is that obviously S/MIME is an option, but generally speaking that's complex for all those reasons I explained about the certificates. Generally, if you're looking for a solution for internal mail, we would look at rights management as something which, again, has got the ease of use, which is basically just right-click something and say, I want to protect it. And that then can be used for internal mail and encrypted in that way. And so this then is a service for that outbound mail to the internet. So, as I was saying, when we've got FOPI as a service, what we've talked about is things that it can do to mail as it flows through what we would generally call transport, if we were talking about exchange. And there's obviously something else that can do stuff to mail as it flows through transport. It's called transport rules, which again, as exchange people, you're likely familiar with. Now, there is some overlap between the two. And so it's important just to have a think about, you know, where do we best do something? Do we do something within exchange, transport rules? Do we do something within FOPI with the policies? Now, as I say, there are some overlap pieces, but fundamentally, transport rules can do certain things that FOPI can't and the other way around. So transport rules can look at Active Directory. FOPI is not tied into your Active Directory, so it can't do things like look up your manager and then route a moderated mail to your manager. It can't do things like FOPI can't do things like exceptions. So if you've got a mail rule that you want to apply to everybody except for the chief executive, then FOPI doesn't do exceptions in that way, whereas a transport rule can. Transport rules can identify whether a mail is going to an internal user or an external user. Things that FOPI can do that transport rules can't out of the box are, as I talked about, headers. We can look into any part of the header of a message and act on different of the attributes within the header. So there are things that FOPI can do, there are things that transport rules can do, and it's important just to have a think about where you would do different things. I mean, the other thing here is, for example, around tracking messages. So tracking messages, obviously once it's internal, then you'd use that within the exchange message tracking. Then once the message is going external out of your organization, you'd have a look within that tracing piece of the FOPI service management console that we looked at earlier. So just keep that in mind. Figure out where it's best to do things and have a think about how you implement different rules. So that brings me on to the final section and talking about mail routing. This is where we sort of put together some of the things that we've looked at, the various different pieces of technology, things like policies and connectors, and kind of bring it together into something we can actually see in action. So we start off with TLS. I've talked about this briefly already, but FOPI by default does opportunistic TLS, which means that we will respond to a request, but it doesn't mean that we force it. We can, of course, turn on forcing TLS, which means that we can exchange certificates, and that could be either a trusted certificate with a public certificate authority, or it could be a private CA that we import. That will enable us then to have this relationship between two locations based on a domain name or an IP address and ensure that all mail is secured, encrypted at both ends, and we make sure that we have that authentication. One thing to mention really is that obviously if you do set up false TLS and you get the settings wrong, then mail won't flow, and that's just fairly straightforward but needs to be said. And you can see here, this is just a screenshot of the connector. This is where we set up connectors, and you can see that we put in sender domain, sender IP address, and the red box highlights where we turn on and off encryption. And that's done again through the administrator console under the domains tab that you'll see if you go and sign up for a trial. The next piece is outbound smart hosting. Outbound smart hosting is used in a variety of different ways, but it enables us to route, again, as I talked about with those connectors, mail out in different ways. So we could go out via an MX record, but we could also go out a specific route. And particularly in the Office 365 world, this is used if we want mail to go from the cloud service through FOPI as part of Office 365, but then be routed back on premises so that we can do additional filtering. So let's say that you've got an archiving system, or let's say that you've got a data leakage prevention system on premises. We can use this smart hosting capability to ensure that all outbound mail will go via that on-premises system and allow you to maintain and capture and archive it. So that's another piece that we'll come to when we talk about setting up mail routing for hybrid. If any of you have played around with hybrid, and you may have seen this sort of thing in Ben Appleby's session a couple of days ago, you'll see that this is where you set up the option of the different mail flow. So you can see that we've got deliver internet-bound messages directly using the external recipient's DNS settings, but we've also got the option to route all internet-bound messages through your on-premises exchange servers. And that's what it's configuring. It's basically configuring that connector to route mail via the specific smart host. And the final piece of the puzzle is safe listing, inbound safe listing, which basically allows us to configure the connector so that it doesn't do filtering. And again, we'd use that in a trusted scenario where we're very happy that all that mail is coming from a trusted partner or maybe our on-premises solution, and we're quite happy that we're going to receive all that. We don't need to spend time filtering and marking that. We're perfectly happy to accept that mail. That then, again, is shown here in this bottom half of the screen. That's where we configure that. You can see all those checkboxes are not ticked, and that means that we've turned off the filtering for that particular connector, as long as it matches the pieces that we've got listed, the domain, the recipient, and the certificate that we've set up. Right. So let's put all these things into action and look at mail routing and how we might set up mail routing with Office 365 and exchange on premises. Now, there's two options here. We've got one option, which is the recommended option for where we point our MX record. Our MX record generally, during a migration, will continue to point where it has previously pointed. So where we've had your MX record pointing on premises to the servers that you've been running mail system from, generally, we say leave that there. You know, why change something that's working as you're going into a migration? Leave it where it is until we come towards the end. Now, there may be reasons you don't want to do that, and we give you that option, because the second option is to point the MX record straight away to FOPI as part of Office 365. And we might do that, for example, because you actually want to make use of the filtering capabilities. You know, you may not have a very good filtering service, you may not have a filtering service, or your filtering service, and I've had this with a variety of customers recently, has expired, or it's just about to expire. So we want immediately to move to using FOPI as a filtering mechanism. So that's the second option, and it's perfectly valid, and I'm going to now walk through five slides which show in detail exactly how mail will flow through these different scenarios. So the first one, we have a shared address space, and that means we've got the same domain name in the on-premises solution as well as in the cloud solution. So mail will flow in from the internet, from an internet user, sales@fabricam.com, and it's coming in to joe@contoso.com. The mail flows in through the normal connectors into Exchange and that MX Records pointing to Exchange. Now, at this point then, we may do some custom filtering, we may do some journaling, but we don't have to. But either way, that mail is destined to a user that's part of the cloud service. So the mail is sent out via that connector that we talked about into FOPI, and it's then filtered. Now, you'll notice that the virus scanning piece here is highlighted in white, and that's simply because, as I mentioned right at the beginning, when we're doing this with Office 365, the virus filtering is actually happening as part of the servers in the service, the hub transport servers in the service, and not at the FOPI layer. And then the mail's delivered. So straightforward, very simple, what you'd expect. Outbound, again, similar experience. The mail will be sent through, virus scanning is performed on those hub transport servers. It's scanned for spam. And it's scanned for spam here because, again, we're not using one of those trusted connectors because this is going outbound to the internet. This is not matching that same domain. It's going to a different domain. So it's joe@contoso.com sending out to Fabricam. It's not sending it to one of these guys that is his colleague in the on-premises solution, which is what we'll show on the next slide. So that message then will be delivered via the smart host setup. So we mentioned that we might need to do some custom processing, and that message is then delivered on premises. We can do journaling, data leakage prevention, all those things we might need to do, and actually then send that message out to the internet. So that's inbound and outbound. It's using the various pieces we've looked at, the connectors, it's using the skipping of the virus filtering because that happens in Office 365, and it's using the smart host delivery, which enables us to pass that message on premises for it to be scanned and filtered. What about this then, an internal conversation? So this is where it gets a little bit more interesting. This is where some of the clever stuff happens, because this is where we have done some extensions to the mail verb, the SMTP verbs that we use, and some stuff happens to the headers to make this look like it's internal mail. Because obviously what we want is, from the end user perspective, this is just to be another guy who's just your colleague who could be sitting next to you. He doesn't need to know that his mailbox is somewhere else. So again, send and outbound and inbound connectors. So the mail will come from the sales guy at contoso.com, and it's coming to joe@contoso.com. And these guys are both in the same organization. So the mail flows, it goes through any of the processing it might need to do on premises. And then it's delivered to FOPI. And you can see that FOPI in this instance is basically grayed out. And that's because we're using that trusted connector. So remember where we had the screenshot at the bottom with all the checkboxes that weren't ticked? We're not doing filtering because we trust this. We know it's coming from the guy on premises because we've exchanged a certificate. We know it's coming from the right IP address. And basically then, we're just going to let that mail through because we trust it. So filtering is skipped and the mail is delivered. And it's all because of this trusted connector. And what we're basically doing is we're using some custom X headers. So XMS Exchange Organization Auth As, XMS Exchange Organization SCL, and X Cross-Premises Headers Promoted. So it's a bit of a mouthful, and I don't expect you to remember all that. There won't be a test later on, but go and have a look at it. What you can see, if you actually send this and set this up, you can see the headers in the logs. And what you can see is Auth As will show as internal. And that's what makes it look like an internal email. SCL, so that's the spam confidence level, will be -1. And we know that from normal spam processing, just a sec, that's basically showing up as a trusted email. And headers promoted is what happens at the end of the process. And that basically is, yes, I accept all these things. You've trusted. I'm a trusted organization. I'm going to accept you, and you look like an internal message. Sure. Okay, so the question is, could spammers manipulate these and use the same X headers? And basically they couldn't, because it's not coming, so the mail is not originated from the internal IP addresses of your servers on premises. So although they could play around with the headers, they wouldn't actually be able to set them all to the right values and basically spoof all the internal messages, because essentially it's come from your IP address. That's the key thing. So although they could set up all the same headers, that would have actually originated from their IP address. So unless they could convince the system basically that it had come from there, then it wouldn't work. Okay, so the last scenario. The last scenario is what happens if you've changed your MX record. So now your MX record is pointing to FOPI, and this will be that scenario whereby perhaps your existing filtering service has expired. So now we're pointing to FOPI. The mail comes in, and again, this is from the internet. It's from sales@fabricam.com to joe@contoso.com. The mail goes and hits FOPI. Again, that virus filtering piece is missed, but we do that in the service. And the mail hits the Office 365 servers. Now, at this point, you know, you might think, well, you know, what happens now? Why is FOPI not immediately sent that straight on premises? Well, that's because basically FOPI simply follows those connectors. It doesn't understand where that user is. It leaves that to the Exchange servers as part of Office 365. So those servers will then look up. They've got directory synchronization enabled, and they will figure out that that user is actually an on-premises user. And they will route that mail back out and send it through into the Exchange service on premises. So that's, again, straightforward. The only thing that you need to bear in mind here is it's not one of those things that's acceptable to go and buy one license for Office 365 and then route all your mail in this way to your on-premises users. Because you could essentially be buying one license and then protecting 10,000 users on premises, and Microsoft wouldn't like that so much. So basically, just bear in mind that you need to make sure you've got those licenses in place if you want to do this routing for the on-premises users. Now, the thing I would say is if you're migrating to Office 365, then actually, you know, you're likely to have those users licensed anyway. You know, so actually, and also if you've got the enterprise CALS for Exchange, then again, you also have the access to the FOPI service, although you may not be using it. So in a sense, it's very likely that you're covered for this, but it is one of those things to bear in mind and just be aware of, because otherwise, obviously, then you're potentially using software in a way that you're not supposed to be. And that brings me on to the final piece, which is outbound. And if we watch this one carefully, we've got a couple of scenarios on this slide. So it's the same scenario, the shared address space, and it's using the MX record pointing to FOPI as part of Office 365. The message comes out from the service. So this is Office 365. It's sent to FOPI. And basically, there's nothing stopping that being routed directly out to the internet, because in this scenario, we're not doing that smart hosting thing where it goes on premises. We're just routing it directly out to the internet. And that's very straightforward. Oops, skipped a bit too far, sorry. So that's the first scenario. The first scenario, very simple. Mail goes out through the service, out to the internet. But what about users who are on premises? How do they get their mail out to the internet? The first thing they can do is just route it directly out with no filtering. But as we talked about right at the beginning, obviously something we'd like to help you guys out with is to protect your outbound, to protect your brand and protect your reputation going outbound. So out of the box, by default, when you set up hybrid mode, this is not something that you can do, because the connectors are set up in such a way that mail has to go directly out from your on-premises servers. FOPI won't basically accept outbound mail being routed through it and then out to the internet. But what you can do in this scenario, and you see the dotted line on the screen, is you can have mail routed in this way if you make a support call to the office, to the FOPI support guys, and they will basically set up the connectors in a way that allows you then to protect yourself both inbound and outbound through the service as it shows here on the screen. So with that, pretty much wrapping up, there's a whole bunch of resources here. I highly recommend going and trying this out, because if nothing else, you can, you know, learn a new skill, see a new product, and go and try this out. There's a lot of things to read here. There's obviously those links within the administration console as well, which are worth looking at. More than happy to take some questions, and obviously for people to mail me. Obviously, my details are here on the slide, and I'll hang around as well. But I would like to just draw your attention to a couple more sessions that are going on. Now, the top two have already happened. So the top two were over the last couple of days. So if you weren't there, have a look at the recordings. There's obviously some more information about this hybrid setup in the 303 session. And archiving in the cloud is another session which covered things like compliance and filtering and those pieces. Today, we've got a session this afternoon about using load balancers within Exchange, which again is one of the last Exchange sessions of the conference. And then Obviously, this is something which is coming up, which will be interest to nearly all exchange people. Whether or not you can make it there or not, it's going to be a great conference, and we're going to have a lot of content about some new stuff there, which will obviously be of interest to people. And with that, I would also very much like to, you know, thank you for coming. It's been very, very good to have an audience of this size, at least on 8:30 on the last day of a conference. So that's been great. It would be very helpful if you could give some feedback and do the evaluations. I'm sure you're very used to being asked by now at the end of a conference. And with that, thank you very much. Happy to take some questions, or if you want to come up and we can talk through things. So thanks very much.